In this episode of Domestic Terrorists of 1994, certain events happen in real time after we record the show that really strike close to home. And these two movies, Speed and Blown Away, are about, domestic terrorists and bombs. And, we recorded it on December 9th of 2020. And on December 25th, at close to 6 a.m., there was a large, bomb explosion by an individual in downtown Nashville that destroyed many buildings, and as he took his own life. And it's not just in our hometown. It's this is a part of town that is a very visited part of town. It was a very targeted attack on a telecommunications building. And, we've both been down to those areas several times, and, it's part of our historic city. Some of those buildings have been standing there since the early 1900s. So, yeah, the episode seems very poorly timed to have this episode, be released after this happened, because this is one of our first, episodes of 2021, and then we had this tragedy happen on Christmas Day that relates to the same subject matter of what we're talking about in the movies. And we didn't want to minimize the impact of the events because it was recorded before this event happened. And we can't control when these events are going to happen or when they're going to affect our city or your city or the United States or the world. But, it's still something that we did. There's still, movies, great movies that we watch and we talk about. And that's what we do. We watch them and we talk about them. And that's all we do. So thank you for the journey of, bringing us, to your ears in enjoyment of the movies. But we just wanted to be sensitive about the subject, since it was something that was so close and so real to both Matt and I. So we thank you very much, and we hope that you enjoy this episode. On this week's episode of Video Culture, The Domestic Terrorists of 1994, with Blown Away and Speed.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion, two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills, there will be thrills, and there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
And thanks for joining us for another episode of Video Culture. I'm your host, Ryan Acree.
And I'm Matthew Estrey.
And on this week's episode, we have the domestic terrorists of 1994, or you like to call them mad bombers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of the old school exploitation term.
Well, because domestic terrorists wasn't a term until created like later in the 2000s at some point. So, but this was 1994, right?
Yeah, domestic terrorist is a much classier term than a crazy guy who blows stuff up.
Much more PC, I guess you would say.
Yes.
This
is our first double feature of 2021. So
exactly, episode 54. For those of you keeping score, So, but yeah, we wanted to do like something and hit it off with a bang. And, you know, I can't think of like a bigger movie or bigger action movie of 1994 than Speed. I mean, the only other one I think that came out like around this time was like True Lies, I think. Mm-hmm. And so, and also Die Hard 2 or
you're thinking of Die Hard 3.
Die Hard 3. With a Vengeance. Yeah, and then let's see, Beverly Hills Cop 3 came out in 1994.
Yeah, but we don't talk about Beverly Hills Cop 3 on this podcast.
Doesn't exist, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, Speed was huge. It was everywhere. But then you also had Blown Away, which was also like it had some major stars. You have Jeff Bridges, you have Tommy Lee Jones, and it's also like this sort of mad bomber sort of plot where there's bomb experts are trying to figure out where the next bomb's going to be or who's behind it all.
Yeah,
or whatever.
The very basics of the plots are very similar. We've got kind of a Deep Impact Armageddon situation here where you have two movies that come out in the same year that have very, very similar concepts. And one is more obviously more successful than the other, both critically and financially. And I would say creatively, too.
And they had similar budgets. I mean, Speed had a budget of $30 million. Blown Away had a budget of $28 million.
And they both had kind of unlikely action hero leads.
But, yeah, I mean, Tommy Lee Jones is the villain here, right?
Yeah.
You also have, you know, in Speed, you have Dennis Hopper as the villain, right? You also have, like, Keanu Reeves as, like, the good guy cop, and the good guy cop is Jeff Bridges in Blown Away. So let's talk about a little bit about the movie that is probably, like, a little bit of the lesser-known movie, which is Blown Away, okay? So, yeah, Jeff Bridges plays this, bomb expert in Massachusetts in Boston. His name is Jimmy Dove. But it starts off, like, the whole movie starts off with this prison escape in Ireland where Tommy Lee Jones' character, which is Ryan Garrity, like, breaks out of prison. And
yeah, he's a CIA bomber. He wants to take revenge on basically the person who was responsible for him ending up in prison, which is Jimmy Dove.
Right.
Jimmy Dove's not his real name.
Liam.
His real name is Liam Garrity.
No, Liam McGivney.
Liam McGivney.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Garrity, they weren't related, but yeah, Ryan Garrity is Tommy Lee Jones' character.
About that. You just said that, yeah.
Let me read the synopsis right quick.
Sure, and then go ahead.
We'll talk about their bad Irish accents. All right. Jimmy Dove works for the bomb squad in Boston, and he is always the one who is on the tough jobs. One day, he decides to quit the force to become a teacher for the rookies for the squad. A few days later, his former partner is killed by a bomb, and Jimmy becomes suspicious that maybe this bomb could have been built by a former friend of himself. He begins to investigate and finds out that his worst nightmare has returned from his past. Written by Harold Mayer on IMDb.com. Thank you, Harold. That's a little bit of a breakdown, but yeah, I mean, this guy, Tommy Lee Jones, is, you know, you don't find out really till the middle of the movie that these two guys used to know each other and used to be like sort of IRA, you know, cohorts, and, you know, and it's kind of revealed that, you know, now he's, as Jeff Bridges' character changes his name, Jimmy Dove, and decides to do good things with his bomb knowledge, right? And like defuse bombs. And Tommy Lee Jones' character, he gets thrown in jail. And so now he's back to, you know, ignite revenge, you know? So.
Yeah, and that's basically the plot. I mean, the plot is he sets a bunch of bombs. The dude tries to stop him. And, know, things blow up, you know.
Yeah.
The end.
And with really bad Irish accents. I mean, Tommy Lee Jones kind of goes in and out of his Irish accent. Jeff Bridges kind of goes in and out of it. It was really, really difficult. And it was also kind of crazy to see Tommy Lee Jones as like an unhinged sort of character.
Yeah, he's done it a few times in his career, and it never really works.
He's
not good at he's not good at going over the top.
No, he's better as like the guy who's got it all together. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The first time that we all remember Tommy Lee Jones is like in The Fugitive when he's like, you know, what are you doing? He's like, I'm thinking, well, think me up one of them jelly donuts. You know, it's like you want that. That's the kind of character we all love. Like the Men in Black type of Tommy Lee Jones, right? Not this
the
like
nonsense.
Yeah, yeah. Like not this run around like I'm a madman kind of. I don't know.
I will say the one thing I greatly enjoy about it. I really like the scenes of him goofing around while the YouTube music plays.
Yeah.
I find those scenes pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I actually like this movie more than you do. It does have really spotty Irish accents. I think there is some fun stuff there. I think Forrest Whitaker is pretty good in it. Mm-hmm. I think, like I said, you mentioned all before we started that the microphotography, the way they film a lot of the bomb stuff is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
They show you the mechanics of the bombs quite a bit. I think that's pretty cool.
Well, to highlight that, really, that was a huge like use of like micro photography and stuff like that. Like, especially in that, like I can see parallels into, you know, stuff like Minority Report and stuff like that. Like a lot of movies started using sort of micro photography, and especially since, you know, computer generated, like became, you know, a lot more, like sort of attractive. 'Cause you can make like a CG, you know, micro photography, you know, little cutaway or something like that. So, yeah, it makes things a little more interesting, a little more tied in to the whole story. It ramps up the sort of excitement of everything because there's these bombs. But some of the bombs he can, you know, defuse. Some of them, you know, he can't. I mean, it's just like I always felt that, you know, in this movie, like the Ryan Garrity character was always like one or two steps ahead of, you know, the Jimmy Dove character, right? Like, where in Speed, you're kind of going the opposite way. Like, he's got the better hand, but then, you know, you start gaining and getting a better hand as you go along. But I don't know. I never really felt like up until the end where Jimmy Dove had kind of an advantage, I guess.
Yeah, and it's just the way he kind of defeats the bad guy, it's all plot contrivances. It's not very well written. It's you're right, the accents are really spotty. Really, the best thing the movie's got going for it is it's got some really nice direction. It's filmed really well. It was directed by a guy named Stephen Hopkins,
yep,
who did Predator 2 and The Ghost in the Darkness, and a movie we've talked about on the written part of Video Culture, Judgment Night.
Yeah, Judgment Night, yeah.
It's got a pretty strong visual style, but you're right, a lot of the other stuff in it is pretty ropey.
Yeah, the use of music, the use of sound effects, the use of like visuals, I think were absolutely incredible. And really, you know, to have Jeff Bridges, he is just such a, you forget how much of a physical actor that he is. And you can just tell what he's thinking just by, you know, looking at him. You know what I mean? You don't have to question what's going on in his head, which is always a great sign of a great actor, right?
It's true, and he's very expressive, but you're right, the accents in this drop in and out constantly, and Tommy Lee Jones is pretty grating. This movie, like I said, came out in 1994, and 1994 was a pretty formative year in my movie watching experience. I think I saw every major like blockbuster that came out in 1994.
Right,
that's when I first discovered I love going to the movies. Yeah. So I actually saw Blown Away, I think twice at the movies, because I got to the point where I would see everything, and then I would just see whatever was playing because I had already seen everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're, you know, 13 years old, you don't necessarily know that, oh, that's not what Irish accents sound like. You know, you don't pick up on how kind of chintzy some of these things are.
Yeah.
So I had some good nostalgia feelings for this movie, and I think that kind of informed my rewatch of it.
Mm-hmm.
But all the things you've said about it are definitely true.
Mm-hmm.
But I gotta say, I do really like Jeff Bridges' action hero, and I'm sad we never got more attempts at him trying to be like an action hero type character.
Yeah,
because I think he brings something really unique to it, and he's kind of let down by the movie around him, or really let down by the script.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, he's one of those guys that, you know, he just like uplifts every scene that he's in. You know what I mean? So I can't see anybody else doing what he was doing in any of the scenes that he was in. I also enjoyed seeing Forrest Whitaker. I thought that was a really, you know, great performance by him. It's kind of like the hot shot, you know, kind of new guy. And even a young Cuba Gooding Jr., right?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. Yeah. Cuba has got Cuba has got a uncredited cameo in it as one of Jimmy's students.
Bomb Squad class member is how he is credited.
Yeah, I actually looked at the credits and don't remember seeing his name actually in the credits in the actual movie.
I mean, I had to find that from IMDb, which actually has a full, you know, list. He doesn't have a name. He's just Bomb Squad class member.
But it's clearly Cuba Gooding Jr. because when they panned over to him, I'm like, it's Cuba Gooding Jr. I didn't know he was in this.
Yeah. I think he was even at the wedding, too, I think.
Yeah. Well, and he hit it big like 3 years later. So, I mean, it was really, really right before he blew up. Anyway, no pun intended, blew up.
But yeah, it's just one of those guys that you plan in the crowd and you're like, hey, I know that guy.
That's the fun thing about going back and watching older movies. You spot people before they were famous. Like, oh yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's really funny watching old or old television shows, and you'll have like a cameo, you know, somebody will have a guest performance. It's like, oh yeah, there's that guy. Or there's that girl.
There's George Clooney.
Yeah.
What's he doing in The Facts of Life?
What is he doing on Roseanne?
Yeah, exactly. So you weren't a fan of this one, and that's fair. So, what's one thing that you did like about it? What would be your rewind and watch again moment from this film?
I mean, talking about the class scene that we just talked about, with Cuba Gooding Jr. and Forrest Whitaker, that was my favorite scene. Because I think that's one thing that I think that Blown Away really missed. There wasn't a lot of light moments. It was very tense throughout the whole thing. But that was one moment that was just kind of like it was a little tense, but it was also, you know, a little light. And I thought that I think that Jeff Bridges, his character was just like so serious throughout the whole thing. He just needed a little more, you know, lighter moments. Like when, like right after he defused the bomb, the first bomb, you know, that was at the computer or whatever. And he kind of like walks out and be like, yep, that's how it's done, you know, whatever. But when Forrest Whitaker, he sets off that little bomb and it spins up in the air and, you know, he's just like.
Shoots pain everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, that's my favorite scene in the entire movie, too. The other thing that I really like about it is the way it would, again, with the micro photography, the way it would tease the idea of maybe this thing's a bomb and it would kind of fake you out.
Mm.
There's lots of scenes of things where it's red herrings for bombs. Like, oh, you think this might be a bomb, because it'll show you the intricacies of it. But no, it's just kind of keeping you tense.
Right.
I like those moments, too.
Right.
But so, you know.
Yeah, the whole ending scene is like where the whole ship is like the bomb. And it's like showing you this whole sort of the machine that like you set one thing off. It's like dominoes, you know, where they all.
Oh, you're talking about a Rube Goldberg device. Oh,
yeah, where you see every part of this Rube Goldberg device like really up close, you know, and you see the ball hit the thing and see sparks and see, you know, it's that was really cool.
Yeah, I think that's a sneak, but I agree. With a lot of your assessment, I think the movie's really let down by Tommy Lee Jones. Like, he's really not good in this, and I didn't realize it at the time because I wasn't familiar with his work. But I mean, this is maybe one of his worst performances I've ever seen.
Well, even when he's on the beach and he's like, you know, he has an American accent at that point because he's trying to like blend in, right? And he's meeting like the wife and like the kid, right, on the beach.
Yeah, and he's doing this ridiculous American accent. Like, why can't he just use his regular voice, you know? Yeah,
but even when he's there, he's almost too normal in that scene. You still have to be a little bit off a little bit. I don't know.
It just doesn't work. It's hard to put my finger on, but the whole thing is just really miscalculated when it comes to him. Right. And I could forgive, like, Lloyd Bridges and Jeff Bridges slipping accents because they at least are modulated well with the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Like they still feel like they fit into the movie.
Well, they're real, like, that father and, you know, father and son here, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Lloyd Bridges was, like, you know, older in his career, you know. I just kept looking at him, though, thinking, you know, today's the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
It's funny how those comedic roles really kind of dominate our memories of these actors sometimes. Like, you know how Leslie Nielsen used to be a very serious actor, but now whenever I see him, all I can think of is Police Squad. You know?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I just think that Tommy Lee Jones kind of disrupts the entire thing a little bit and really, really drags it down. I mean, I liked it more than you, but I can't really give it a strong recommendation. It's like, as far as the thing is that I would fast forward through. Let me see. Really, I actually really hate most of that beach scene where he's trying to appear normal, because he still comes across as such a weirdo that no mom would let their kid be anywhere near that guy. Like, she would have snatched the kid away and ran.
Yeah. Yeah, this is very true. I go ahead if you are. I didn't want to.
No, it's okay. And it's like everything about his performance is just really, really off. Like I say, it may be the worst one I've ever seen from Jones.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, and that's saying a lot. I think my scene that I like would sort of fast forward through that I was like sort of just kind of bored with, to be quite honest, that I just thought, I mean, not really bored with, but just kind of felt like it was out of place, was when it shifted to Forrest Whitaker's character. And it was kind of like, you know, not that we didn't need to see part of his character and see him like trip a bomb and then, you know, get saved or whatever. I just thought that it was like, okay, now we're following him. Okay, what's going on? And then you defuse a bomb. It's like, then it's defused. And then it's like, it almost like it didn't happen. So it just kind of felt really sort of out of place.
Yeah, that scene bothers me because it feels like a real copycat of the toilet bomb scene from Lethal Weapon 2.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah. It feels so much like that. It feels like a ripoff.
It does. It really does. Because all of a sudden you're like, okay, but what are we doing here? Because, you know, you're trying to watch the whole thing through, you know, Jeff Bridges' eyes, but just getting glimpses of what Tommy Lee Jones' character is doing kind of behind the scenes, trying to, like, ramp up the tension there. But, yeah, it's just kind of weird. And then, really, I don't think American audiences, like, we don't really understand a lot of what happened, too, with the IRA. And I don't think it's really, like, anybody's fault, but, you know, it our history classes didn't really teach a whole, you know, teach it very well or cover it very well. So it's, like, it was really hard for, I think, American audiences to kind of get, you know, attached to that.
Well, and I'm just going to go ahead and say it. The movie's a little bit dull. And a movie that's supposed to be an action movie should not be dull.
No. Yeah. Well, because it's an action movie, but it has more like drama, I guess, and tension than it does action.
And I get that. I know why it does, because I actually know a little bit about the guy who directed it. I've seen quotes from him where he said that he feels like all action should have a purpose and it should not just be action for action's sake. But I think you can skew too far to the other side of that, to where your action movie can be a little dry and talky. And I think that's where Blown Away is, where it's just a little bit, again, it's dull, for lack of a better word. It's just, it's not super compelling for a lot of its runtime.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's some really good insight that, I mean, tells us a lot more about the movie than I would even think of. So,
Sometimes it's hard to find things to say about these kind of middle of the road movies. And that's really, I mean, that's Blown Away. I mean, when I was a kid, I never realized how kind of middling it was. Mm-hmm. Going back and watching it now, you know, 25 years later, it's amazing to see just how mediocre it was. And I guess because I was still learning about movies, I didn't realize that at the time, but it's pretty mediocre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's it is amazing with the cast and with it is, and I don't think I think it's just a part of the writing and the pace and trying to get you wrapped up in it and stuff like that. And I, to be quite honest, I had a little bit of a hard time trying to follow the dialogue because the audio was like, you know, the explosions and the music was so loud, and then the dialogue would be like so quiet, and it would be like these Irish accents. So I'm like, what are they saying? I'm like turning it way up, you know? Mm. So yeah, it was kind of difficult. And you hate that when, you know, you're watching a movie, you don't want to have to fight hearing what's going on, you know, or like trying to figure out what's actually happening, what's going on.
Yeah, I completely understand. As I'm been watching Chris Nolan's new movie, not to get too far into the weeds on that, because it won't be new by the time this comes out. But Christopher Nolan has a real problem with that, where his dialogue is really lowly mixed in his films.
Uh huh.
So I'm watching Tenet, and every once in a while I'll have to stop it and like turn the volume up, and it completely takes me out of the movie because I can't make out what they're saying. And like, I don't think it's my ears, because I watch movies all the time and I don't normally have to do this.
Right.
And It's just a bad sound mix, and that's something that Blown Away has trouble with too. The sound mix isn't great.
Yeah. Well, I have, you know, really expensive speakers at my house, really expensive hi-fi audio system, and you know, I still had trouble hearing. So I don't know. But yeah, because I think about like, well, they're mixing it on like a soundstage, right? Which is kind of like a theater. And they have really great equipment, and they can probably hear it very clear on their stuff, you know, but you watch it on your TV at home with your TV speakers or maybe a sound bar, and maybe it doesn't come out the same kind of way, but you know, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, and I think if the movie was more engaging, it wouldn't necessarily be an issue, but it's not. So that's why we noticed those little technical issues.
Mm-hmm.
But a movie that is way more engaging is another movie that came out the same year, the same summer even, which is Speed.
Speed. Also $30 million budget. Yeah, it was directed by Jan Dabont, who he has a long line of cinematographer credits to some big movies like Die Hard, Cujo, The Hunt for Red October, Basic Instinct, Flatliners, Minority Report. And he, this was, I think, the first movie that he directed. But then because of this, he also directed Twister and also Lara Croft Tomb Raider 2.
Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, Twister was another really big movie. So, I mean, I don't know why his directing career wasn't more prolific. But he is a legendary cinematographer. Like, he has shot some really big movies.
Yeah.
He's worked with everyone.
And visually, it is like Speed is such a great movie, even though that a lot of people say, well, it's just Die Hard on a bus, right? Like, you know, you hear that a lot, or the bus movie. You hear a lot of people talk about the bus movie, but I want to tell you, going back and watching it now, it is as captivating now as it was, you know, back when I first saw it in you know, 1994, 1995.
Yeah, talking about movies, I saw a bunch in the theater because I had seen everything else. I think I saw Speed 4 or 5 times because it was just playing for all summer, and I would just go back and see it occasionally just to kill time. But it is such a enjoyable movie. It's so fun to watch.
It is. It's it's only 116 minutes long, but it's captivating all throughout. And it really, to me, it has like three sort of, you know, pivotal scenes, because you start off like in the elevator shaft. Then it, you know, quickly moves through the bus, which is like the most, you know, the bulk of the film. And then like the last part, which is like the capture, and then like the subway scene and the subway crash. So it's really kind of like this, you're following along in the eyes of like the Keanu Reeves character, Officer Jack Traven. But I'll just read the synopsis right quick. It's a mouthful, but it'll kind of set us up here.
Well, let's go for it. I believe in you.
All right. I'll do my best here. Do my announcer voice. When a young Los Angeles Police Department Special Weapons and Tactics, which is basically SWAT, officer Jack Traven angers retired Atlanta Police Department bomb squad member Howard Payne by foiling his attempt at taking hostages stuck in an elevator with a bomb, Payne, in retaliation, arms a bus with a bomb that will explode if it drops below 50 miles per hour, With the help of spunky passenger Annie, Jack and his partner Detective Harry Temple try to save the people on the bus before the bomb goes off, while also trying to figure out how Payne is monitoring them. That was written by J. Welsh 5742. Thank you, Jane, or J. Welsh, whoever you are. I don't know if your name is Jane. I apologize.
Just misgendered some poor person.
It might be Jason or John. I don't know. I apologize. But yeah, no, I mean, that's basically it. And it's funny how, and I'll just go ahead and point out now that, you know, the, Harry, Detective Harry Temple, is played by Jeff Daniels, who his character is also named Harry in Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah, yeah. I always thought that was kind of funny, too. And also, when I was a kid, I used to get Jeff Daniels and Jeff Bridges confused a little bit. So it always struck me as funny that they're both in these like bomb movies during this one summer.
And actually, when we first pitched this movie, when you first came up with the idea, like, well, we'll do Speed and Bombs Away, and you're like, oh yeah, Bombs Away has
Blown Away
or Blown Away, Bombs Away.
Just fall all over ourselves this episode.
It's been a while. When Blown Away had, you know, you're like, oh, it has Jeff Bridges in it. I was like, yeah, well, Speed has Jeff Bridges. You're like, no, it has just Daniels. I'm like, oh, that's right.
But yeah, but I shouldn't have been snippy with you, because that's a real easy mistake to make unless you're thinking about it.
Yes.
Because we think of Joe, let's be honest, I mean, we all love Jeff Bridges, but he's the dude. We think of him as Lebowski.
He is the dude. We all know he's the dude. He's taking her easy out for all us sinners. So, but yeah, but also breakout performance by Sandra Bullock. It was not her first film, but it was just like a it was like her 11th film, actually. She actually appeared in Demolition Man year before, 1993. But this, you know, this movie really, you know, put her on the map as like a big time star.
Yeah, this was her breakout, like, oh my god, she's a mega star now kind of role.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then Dennis Hopper plays Howard Payne. He plays like the madman bomber. Which I thought that, you know, it was a great, well casting performance. I thought that he was super great, super unpredictable. You're just like really scared at what his next move is going to be and what he's going to say. And he was always like ramped up and tense, like he was on caffeine like the whole time. Like he just drank too many cups of coffee, but he was still like with it and still like really focused. And you're just like, oh gosh, this guy's like so scary. And that's the thing about Tommy Lee Jones. He was like, he was almost like too kind of jokery madman, where it was like, sort of a cartoon character. But like Dennis Hopper's Howard Payne was like very focused and realized, don't mess with me. You know, he was really, really a scary villain. And I always loved how, even when he's talking on the phone, I don't know if you noticed, he's talking on the phone and he's like holding the phone like with his on his left ear, but holding it with his right hand, so it's like pulled around. So it's almost like his body is like in a tense, you know, position the whole time.
Yeah, and the character reason is he supposedly has fingers one off on one hand, but I think that you're right. I think visually it's meant to make him look kind of coiled and like you said, tense. Because one thing that he definitely is much better at than Tommy Lee Jones, their two performances they're two very similar characters, but where Jones fails so utterly and Hopper, you know, soars, is Hopper, again, you're right, is intense. Like, you really believe he could hurt you. And where Tommy Lee Jones is, like, clowning around and doing little dances and talking in silly voices, you think, like, Dennis Hopper will just punch you in the face, you know? Yeah. They're two very different styles of, like, bad guy character, and one really works and one really doesn't.
Well, they're both unpredictable in different ways, right? Like, you know, one is unpredictable in, like, you know, he's really going to go off the deep end and kill all of us. And the other one is, like, he's really just going to, like, you don't know what he's going to do, because just kind of dancing around like a...
He's gonna listen to the Joshua Tree again and dance for while making toys.
That's right. You know? Oh, listen to the lads. You know what they have to say. Yeah. he just plays like a really great character, and he was always like, you know, he did seem to be, you know, a little bit you know, a head step of all the people too, but in a way where you really felt like he was, you know, that he was more planned out. He was more meticulous. He was more thought out in his, you know, sort of bomb plans. And because he was already, you know, it was, you know, he was already Atlanta bomber himself, or worked in the Atlanta bomb squad. He already knew how all the bomb squads worked. And, you know, that's why he came up with the plan that he did, you know, with the bus and everything. But yeah, yeah, I love how this movie keeps you tied in, and it keeps you wrapped up in the action the whole time, because, you know, not because of like Die Hard and like these one-liners and like these fun characters, but how Keanu, because we have to talk about Keanu, how he plays this like really good cop role that like really wants to, you know, save the day and be the hero and make sure everyone is safe. And, you know, he's not really out there to make himself look cool. He's really out there to be like a good cop, you know?
Yeah, he's not like making like a lot of jokes, except for that one joke at the end, which almost feels like it was tacked on. But he's very serious through most of the movie. He's very kind of gritty, where it's sort of like his monotone quality really works for the character. Mm-hmm. He's a very no nonsense kind of cop.
Mm-hmm. And there are some, you know, kind of holes in it, I think, that I can, you know, that you can point at now. It's like, well, why wasn't he, when they had the cops there and there was like, they can't, they were like, you know, ready to get the people, you know, off, you know, came up with a trailer to drive up beside it to get, you know, people off. He's like, why didn't they throw him like a police radio so he could like talk to them or something like that? Like,
yeah,
you know, why wasn't he in better communications with his, with the police about what was actually happening or what was going on? Like, I don't know.
The whole thing is ludicrous. It really is. But yeah, the reason it works is because it never stops throwing things at you. Like, every few minutes, something new happens to, yep, hold your attention and ramp up ramp up what's going on, ramp up the urgency. So you never have time to really think about that this is completely ridiculous. And it is all ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But it moves so well, and they're so committed to it, that you just don't notice until you know, a day or two afterwards. You're like, wait a minute, that's, mm-hmm, that's really silly.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, it's like everything, every little part, they had some puzzle to figure out. Like, they were on the street traffic, and, you know, like, almost ran over, like, a, you know, a baby, right? It turned out to be just, like, you know, a thing full of cans or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So, but then after that, they're like, okay, we'll get on the interstate. Okay, they try to get on the interstate. It's blocked up. Okay, well, we'll get off to a interstate that nobody's on. That's a new interstate, you know, that's closed. That's because it's not finished yet, or it's finished, it's just not open yet. Like, okay, great. And then they go, oh, well, now there's the gap. You got to clear the gap. Okay. Well, now it's like, oh, now we can drive around the airport. Okay, well, that's great. Well, then after that, then Keanu Reeves like kicks a hole in the in the gas tank. So now it's leaking gas. You know, so it's,
yeah,
like one,
I mean,
they solve one, so they, well, they yeah, solve one problem, and then like another problem occurs.
Yeah. And what's smart about that, because really the script is brilliant in that respect, as ludicrous as all this stuff is, it knows it can't give you any time to think about it.
No.
And that's what works so well about it. I mean, it's like, bam, 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 here's this new thing. And by the time it's over with, all you can think is, man, that was a really fun movie.
Yep.
You know, that's super exciting.
Yeah.
And you never once stop and think about how there's so many logistical holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, it's just, all the performances work well together.
Yeah.
You know, the people on the bus have all this personality to kind of fill in around Keanu. Mm-hmm. And also Dennis Hopper is so animated and lively compared to kind of Keanu's stoicism.
Mm-hmm. And then even when the action gets dull, like, you know, you cut to, you know, Harry back at the, you know, back at the office trying to figure out what, you know, where this guy is or who this guy is, yeah, or whatever. Or,
yeah. Yeah, just Jeff Daniels being charming. And yeah, that carries you through the very few quiet moments. There's like maybe 5 minutes of like where stuff is not happening,
yeah,
in this movie. And it's all really well, it's really well constructed.
Well, yeah, because it's like what I say, it's like what I would call like micro moments, right? Like where,
yeah,
you know, they're trying to solve a puzzle, and you have the puzzle, and then like you have that one, and then like, okay, then that leads another thing, and you know. So that's where you just like get totally wrapped up in how we're going to solve this big riddle. There's just like a lot of little stuff and all sprinkled all throughout, and that leaves you, you know, where there's like rising and fall all throughout the whole thing, and that's what really keeps you sort of attached, I guess.
Like, you often hear the phrase, "Oh, this movie's a roller coaster." And you know, that people say that about action films, about these big blockbuster movies all the time. But Speed really is a roller coaster. It has like the dips and the rises and the spins. It gives you that real kind of emotional quality of going through a roller coaster. It's just a marvel of an action movie.
Yeah, because you get to the point. Well, I mean, like in Die Hard, you never really get to a point where you're like, okay, everything's gonna be okay. You know, but you can get to that in Speed, and you can go, okay, they made it to, you know, the airport. They can drive around. They're going to be okay for a little while, you know. But then immediately
something goes wrong again. Exactly. Yeah,
that's what. Yeah. it's never easy, right? The ending was kind of weird with the chase through the subway scene or whatever, and how they get stuck.
Well, I do want to talk about that. I do want to talk about the people on the bus that we've skipped over. Okay. Some neat things about the cast.
Oh,
I would say there's people on in this film that we're huge fans of. We've got, you know, Ferris Bueller's best friend.
Yeah, Alan Rock plays, you know, L.A. Tourist slimeball Doug Stevens.
Yeah, and it's a really great performance. He's kind of the audience surrogate character.
Yeah.
For a lot of the movie.
Yeah, he's kind of like, these are the eyes that you're sort of watching, you know, the bus from, because he's not from L.A. He's kind of like, I'm here as a tourist. And he's really kind of uncomfortable at first, where, like, you know, Sandra Bullock, Annie tries to, like, get away from him, you know. She, like, you know, it's like, oh, there's...
Like, oh, this guy's hitting on me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's gum in my seat, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And I always spot this lady every time she's in a movie now, because we quote her. I think every movie fan quotes her constantly. But Beth Grant is in this. And you know, Beth Grant is from Donnie Darko. She was the I Doubt Your Commitment to Sparkle Motion lady.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So whenever I see her, I immediately think, I Doubt Your Commitment to Sparkle Motion, which is something that you and I say to each other quite a bit.
Yeah, you know? She's always good at playing, like, you know, the character, like, frantic lady, right? Like, you know, and that's what the character that she played here, where she's just like, what about us? Aren't you going to get us off the bus? Like, you know, and she's, you're absolutely correct. She's a great actress.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention that Joe Morton is in this too. Joe Morton was the guy from Terminator 2 and a lot of other great 90s and 80s action films.
He played Dr. Mott. Every time I see him, I'm like, you know, there's Terminator 2 guy, like Dr. Miles Bennett Dyson.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
like, there he is. And I wish he was in like more stuff. He's such a great actor, I think, and just pulled off the role of like the lieutenant just so fantastically, so well put together.
He's such a solid actor. Like, he never really draws attention to himself.
No.
But he is always so good in whatever he's in.
You really believe he's like a LA cop lieutenant, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, Joe Morton to me is one of the unsung heroes of this time period of like movie making, because he is just consistently good and always never mails it in, and he never gets any credit for being as good as he is.
No, not at all. I don't think he really gets. I mean, he's really kind of a secondary role. He's not like a starring role. And I wish he would just, you know, I wish he would get those starring role, you know, leads, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, cause I think that he's fantastic. Also notably, I didn't notice this until I read the, you know, who was in it, but one of my favorite actors is in it as the train driver, Richard Schiff, who plays Toby Ziegler in The West Wing,
I knew I recognized it, but I cannot figure out what he was from.
It's because,
but you're right, that it's Toby.
Yeah, it's because like in as the train driver, he has a full head of hair and he's a little bit skinnier. And you're like, oh wait, but yeah, he's Toby in The West Wing, and you're like, you know, Toby is such a great character in The West Wing, and such a lovable character. He's completely memorable. So yeah, like anything you see him in, you're like, wait, there he is. There's Toby. You know. So anyway, I just thought that. I mean, and he really doesn't even have any lines. He gets like shot up. Like, oh
yeah, like I said, I just recognized his face. I'm like, I know that face, but I didn't take time to look into who it was. So thanks for calling that out, because I totally would have missed that.
Yeah, it was about 5 years before the West Wing, when he was a little bit skinnier. But yeah, I mean, and I still have to give like credit to Keanu and, you know, Sandra Bullock, both pulling off this movie, the way that they did. So I don't think I don't think you can make this movie without either of those two, to be quite honest.
I would agree. And every time I go back and rewatch, we talked about it before when we did the Keanu episode last season. Every time I go back and I rewatch an older Keanu film, I realize how little we appreciated him back then. Because people used to make fun of him about him being a bad actor. Yeah. And he's really, again, it goes back to he's not. He's such a great movie star. Mm-hmm. He really is.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that, you know, in this year of our Lord 2021, that he's finally gotten the respect he deserved all these years for being just phenomenal at what he does.
It's because he's like, you know, Bill and Ted, you know, and he's also from California. So he's, you know, whoa. You know, that sort of thing. I mean, and even does the woe line in The Matrix. But yeah, I think that he always plays it with, you know, his characters with very serious sensibilities and goes to great lengths for his roles. I mean, he is very, you know, goes very deep and very committed and passionate about the roles that he plays. So I heard like they were worried about his long hair because he just did Point Break. And they were worried about him being an LA cop with long hair. So he's like, he just showed up at the set, you know, he just showed up at a meeting like with his head shaved. And they're like, okay, maybe that's too intense. And so he was like, okay. So he had to let it grow out a little bit. But yeah, that's how that's how committed he is to, you know, making the roles like really happen for the team. He doesn't really take in like, I can keep my long hair. I can do whatever I want. Like he's very committed.
Yeah, you don't get a sense of ego from him. Like he seems like whatever is right for the movie, he's going to try to do.
Yeah,
and I always, as someone who watches a lot of films, I really appreciate that mentality. And Sandra Bullock, of course, is she's just phenomenal. She's such a reliably great actress, and she always brings her all to any movie she's in, no matter how bad it may be. She's just a delightful screen presence. Mm-hmm. And she's great in this. I mean, you can really tell why she became such a big star. Like she is almost the beating heart of this movie. Like, I mean, you know, even though Alan Ruck's kind of the audience character, the I think the one the audience most identifies with is Annie.
Yeah.
Because you wonder what you would do in that situation. Like, would you be that brave and that put together in this tense situation? Like, we can never be Keanu, but we might be able to drive the bus, you know?
Yeah. Well, and how, the thing that I really liked about her character, especially like how it's written and how she played it off, is like she's one of those girls. And I know that in the synopsis, you know, it says, you know, with the help of spunky passenger Annie, and the spunk just like, you know, comes to mind. And it's not that she's just like fast talking and that sort of thing. It's like you can tell she's friends with everybody on the bus and she knows everybody on the bus and she, you know, jokes around with the bus driver and she, is the first person to speak up like after, you know, Beth Grant, like Helen, like, you know, falls off the bus or whatever and is really taken back by it. You know what I mean? And that, you know, kind of brings you to the seriousness of like the situation and stuff like that. I think that you're right. I think that the identification, like, what would I do? Like, would I be able to get on the platform under this moving bus, you know, with Keanu? You know what I mean? At the end.
No, not at all. Yeah.
It's like, oh, shit, this is really scary. Yeah. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah. But yeah, honestly, if you talk about the three performances that really make Speed work is Keanu, Sandra Bullock, and Dennis Hopper, and they nail it so strongly.
Yeah.
But let's talk about, you know, the moments we don't like about it really quickly.
Uh-huh.
What parts of this would you fast forward through? What would you skip over?
Oh gosh, that's really, really hard. Because it's just like there's so many, you know, there's so many things that you would do. I still have trouble with how they get involved with getting back into like the subway and stuff like that. But yeah, I have a hard time thinking about like what I would sort of skip over.
Okay, well, I've got mine figured out, because okay. These two things have always bugged me about it. There's okay. two things. I'll go ahead and start off with the little thing first. We talked about how Keanu's not really quippy in the movie. He doesn't really do like hero jokes, except for the very end when he kills Dennis Hopper's character and he goes, "Yeah, but I'm taller." I hate that line. I would so cut that line out.
I see. Yeah,
you don't need it.
Yeah, I think that. I don't know. I think that you needed a line because like you see him get like, and I'm sorry to ruin it for people who haven't seen it, where he gets like, you know, his head like gets decapitated or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. You kind of need a final line for that. I mean, it's always funny how in all these movies, these action movies, no matter what, you know, it's going to come down to the main guy and the other guy getting into some sort of fist fight. Almost always.
Yeah.
That always bothers me. I'm like, why do we have to have a fist fight? Why can't the dude just be like, bam, you're dead?
Yeah, and also you have to have this, and that's the point. It's weird to see, like, Dennis Hopper fist fight Keanu Reeves. Like, would that really be a fight, you know?
Yeah.
But the other thing that bugs me about it, and this is probably going to be weird to some people, because it was such a big part of the marketing campaign, I hate the bus jump. Yeah. I hate where they jump the freeway. It takes me out of the movie. It's a bridge too far in that one moment for me. I can suspend my belief. I cannot think about how ludicrous it all is, except for that one moment. And it always pulls me out of the movie for a moment, and then I have to get back into it every time.
Yeah.
Even from the very first time I saw the movie, it's just, it's too big of a logic jump for me.
Yeah, when I watch it, I go, well, I know this is Hollywood fake, and I'm just going to have to deal with it. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And the rest of the movie is not like that at all. You don't really think about it, but that one is just so brazen and so in your face. Mm-hmm. It's like they're daring you to get mad about it almost.
Yeah. I didn't like how the bus had to go off and like just run into a plane. Like, really?
Yeah.
Of all things, we're in the middle of and it just a plane right there, not too far away.
It had the big explosion for really no reason.
Really? Yeah. This is...
Like, you know that explosion was just like, to put it in the trailer?
I don't know if you've ever walked... I've been... Like, I don't know if you've ever been to, like, actually walked out on the tarmac and seen how big and empty and open it is. Anyway,
I have. I've seen how kind of vast they are.
And you're just like, that's what we're doing? Okay. All right.
You gotta have those explosions, man. It was the 90s. It was a simpler time where we needed more explosions in movies.
Yeah, just a plane just happens to be right there at the right moment. You know what I mean? It's like where it drops below 50 and like just, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, but to go back to positives, the scenes I would savor.
Yeah.
My favorite scene in the entire movie is kind of like the little mini episode that starts the movie with them rescuing the people from the elevator. To me, that's almost better than the rest of the movie. And I mean, it's such a strong way to start it. It's just a nice little mini story.
Yeah.
The banter between Jeff Daniels and Keanu Reeves is really great. Makes me wish that Jeff Daniels was in more of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like their chemistry, and I really love the elevator scene where they're rescuing the people. I think it's just a great bit of tension, a great bit of action filmmaking. Just love it.
Mm-hmm. I liked how they foiled one of my favorite things about the movie. Just it's not really a scene per se; it's more just the technicality of it. How they tricked him using like the video footage and stuff. I thought that was like genius. And I was like, that is really cool. Cause you would think like, okay, like you found the mirror or you found the camera, like it would just be easy for him to just like, you know, block it out or something like that. But he knew, he's like, no, I can't, because then he's just going to blow it up because he knows I spoiled his plan. So it's like for them to quickly be able to do that. And like, there's no explanation of how they did it, of how they like, you know, found the frequencies and like rebroadcast this and whatever. They just did it.
Well, because you got to keep it moving. Yeah. You got to keep the whole thing going.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, that's the first time I ever saw that in a film, and it really became a trope after that. Like, you see that trope of like having the one little bit of footage looped in so many movies after Speed.
Yep.
And almost to the same thing where there'll be like one little thing wrong with it, and that's how the villain will know that they've been duped.
Mm-hmm.
You see that so much in movies after Speed.
Yep.
So, but I think it really popularized what became a very big action movie trope in that moment. Because you're right, at the time it is very clever.
Yeah, because you know, in some you know, things, it's like. Like even in the movie that we watched, like the Manhattan Project or whatever, he makes the cameras go haywire. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's like, but in that movie, it's like he just takes like good footage and just like loops it over and over. It's genius. I thought the use of that, the writing of that was really, really, was kind of like, you know, well sort of conceived. It was, and audiences, like, you got it like right away. Like, you're just like, oh yeah, okay. You just looped it.
Yeah, and it makes perfect, and you can see why it became such a heavily used thing in movies afterwards.
Right.
Because it's such a good idea.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, there's so much good stuff about Speed. I mean, there's so many good things. We could sit here and praise it all day long, but the show can only be so long.
Yeah.
So let's get into that trivia, man.
All right, so there's not a lot of trivia on Blown Away, I mean, obviously. I will talk about a couple people that almost were in the movie, but Richard Harris, the guy that played Albus Dumbledore in the Harry Potter series, was actually going to play Bridges' mentor, the guy that played his dad. What's his name? What is his name? Lloyd Bridges. Lloyd Bridges.
Oh, I thought you were looking for the character's name.
No,
right?
So
I don't
remember
the character's name.
His character's name was Max O'Bannon, but he almost played. The guy that played Albus Dumbledore almost played his character. However, the role wound up going to Bridges' actual father, Lloyd. So the producers made Lloyd Bridges audition because they associated the actor with comedy. So just like we're saying, it's like, you know, can he play a serious part, you know, because or whatever. So they actually made him audition. The movie was filmed on location in Massachusetts from August 1993 to January 1994. The Boston Bomb Squad acted as consultants, and the climactic ship explosion, that was for real. That wasn't a model, and it was so powerful that it shattered 8,000 windows in the East Boston during filming.
It is pretty impressive.
I mean, it is big. I mean, it's huge. They had to get so many permits for that thing. It opened fourth place in its opening weekend, making it MGM's biggest opening weekend ever, but suffered in comparison to Speed, a release released a few weeks earlier. Speed was released in on June 10th, and Blown Away was released on July 1st. But other movies it had to compete with, like we said earlier in the show, City Slickers 2, Forrest Gump, True Lies, Natural Born Killers. The budget was $28 million, and the box office was $30.2 million.
Yeah, 1994 was a great year for movies.
Yeah, Roger Ebert gave it 2 stars. He says, "Blown."
Not surprising.
Yeah, he says, "Blown Up," which the actual movie is called "Blown Away," is the kind of movie that people should be sentenced to see if they complain that Speed is implausible.
That's mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomato critic score 38%, audience score 40%.
That seems really harsh, but okay.
I mean, that's what it is. Speed. Yeah. So, a lot of information on Speed. So the screenwriter was a guy named Graham Yost. He was inspired by movies Runaway Train from 1985, a 1975 Japanese film called The Bullet Train, and a movie that we talked about, 1976's The Silver Streak. So the initial script had the bus circling Dodger Stadium, and then the bus was running the running into the Hollywood sign and destroying it.
Yeah, the Hollywood sign, that's kind of terrible. Yeah, let's. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad they changed that. It's a little too silly.
Yeah, they couldn't get rights to Dodger Stadium, so that was an easy change. But initially, Keanu didn't want to do it because he thought there was a lot of one-liners in there, kind of like Die Hard, and he was like, no, I don't want to do it. So they actually brought in Joss Whedon, who our audiences should know who Joss Whedon is. I shouldn't have to say, but, you know, he was, you know, big writer for Buffy, Firefly, Toy Story, Cabin in the Woods,
The Avengers,
yeah. you know, the little thing called The Avengers. And anyway, he was brought in as a script doctor, so he's not credited at all. I think they just, you know, paid him like some sort of like consultant fee, and he rewrote most of the dialogue. And took many of the corny, glib one-liners from Keanu's character and made him from being a maverick hotshot to the polite guy trying not to get anyone killed. And Yost actually said that he gives credit to Whedon for coming up with the pop quiz hotshot line.
Yeah, this even though Whedon was accredited for Speed really opened doors for him in Hollywood and led him to get bigger opportunities. So this is kind of Whedon's breakout film in a lot of ways too, even though he never got official credit for it.
Right. Yeah, I think he, like I said, he probably made. Yeah, that's probably why he did it, so he could get sort of some, you know, some of that cred, some of that street cred. And I think it really paid off because Speed really paid off. But you can see that in Speed, and you can see that really story writing. Like, you can see a lot of that Joss Whedon in that, in Speed. Other actors that were considered for Jack Traven were Stephen Baldwin, Tom Cruise, Tom Hanks, Wesley Snipes, Woody Harrelson, and Jeff Bridges.
Oh, to live in the role where we could have seen Tom Hanks in Speed.
Or
that's a crazy alternative version I would love to see.
Or Jeff Bridges, who is in Blown Away in Speed, but he did Blown Away instead.
Yeah, you know, he's kicking himself about that, you know.
I don't think he really mind. But no, and then Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson turned around and did a similar film in 1995 called was it Money Train?
Mm-hmm, which is not good.
No. During early production, Keanu Reeves' friend River Phoenix died. So director DeBont changed the shooting schedule around to make it easier for scenes for Keanu. However, Reeves still wanted to do a lot of the stunts himself. 90% of the film is stunts, you know, he is doing. And he wanted to do the stunt himself of him jumping from the Jaguar onto the bus. And he even rehearsed it in secret after DeBont disapproved. However, on the day of the sequence, Reeves did the stunt himself, terrifying DeBont in the process.
Which kind of shows you, that's kind of the precursor to like Keanu Reeves' action hero, which is what we all kind of know him as now, you know? Because now he's getting all these accolades for being John Wick and doing all this John Wick stuff himself. And he goes to show you he was trying to do this stuff, you know, nearly 30 years ago too, and just not getting enough credit for it.
Right. And you know, you hear a lot of like Tom Cruise wants to do a lot of the stunts himself and all this other kind of stuff. And I think Keanu wanted to do it. I mean, to show, I mean, not just like because he want for the cameras and stuff like that. I think because the character, you know, would do it. So he would do it. You know what I mean? I think he's that committed. But breaking the glass on the front of the bus door at the beginning of the movie was actually an accident, but it was left in the final cut.
Really? That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. 10 buses were used in the making of the film. Each one had two steering wheels, one for the driver and one for the other stunt driver, mostly on top of the bus. There are some scenes where they're doing like the external shots where they had a steering wheel like kind of behind the driver. So, Sandra Bullock did actually, though, learn how to drive a bus for the film. and even passed her bus driver's test on her first attempt. So the bus jump was actually inspired by scouting locations. DeBont noticed big sections of road missing and had Yost add in a bus jump. So the actual jump is the directional ramp from I-105 westbound to I-110 northbound. There was a gap in the road that they that was digitally edited. So it's not actually there. So they took it out and just put in like blue sky or like whatever. But the jump, the actual physical jump, was real. So what they did is they set up like a ramp and, you know, just like, and then made the bus so empty except for the driver. The driver had a special shock-absorbing seat to avoid spinal injury when it landed. And the driver also wasn't in the front of the bus. He was like a little bit pushed back so he wouldn't get launched out, you know, the front of the bus. So the first attempt didn't go so planned, and the stunt driver missed the ramp, crashed the bus, and made the bus completely unusable. So 2 days later, and then also they didn't even tell like the studio this. They didn't tell like anybody. So they were like, okay, well, we'll just do it again. So 2 days later, they made a second attempt. That was successful. However, the bus traveled much farther than they intended, and the back of the bus actually caught the camera, knocking it over and completely crashing it and destroying it. And they lost all the footage from it. So luckily, there was another camera that was placed about 90 feet from the jump, and that's what captured the event, and that's what you see in the film. So
the joys of movie making.
Yes, exactly. So, but yeah, I mean, so it's really, I mean, they went to great lengths to, you know, to make that jump, you know, there. So I know it's fake. I know it's Hollywood, but I mean, crap. I mean, you still have to appreciate the physical, you know, thing, Matt.
Oh, I do. I mean, I respect it. I just don't like it.
That's true.
You know, Well, and it's really just that one moment. I mean, I think Speed's a phenomenal film. I think it's really, as far as Die Hard like movies, I think it's the best Die Hard esque movie. It really is, and there's a lot of movies that are like Die Hard, but I think none of them are as good as Speed. And I would even say that Speed might be better than Die Hard. That's a whole different conversation, but I really do like Speed.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think Die Hard has its own sort of, you know, with the quib one-liners and the more John Wayne-esque character versus, like, the good cop character. But, yeah, I see what you're saying. I see where you're going with it. As far as, like, a movie and what captures you and what keeps the movie going, I agree with you. All right.
It's such a well-made action film. It really is.
Well, I'd tell you who else would agree with you. And that is... Wait. Before we get off the bus, though.
Okay.
No pun intended. The bus jump, that is. there's that... the Mythbusters actually did episode... I think it was like in 2009 or something like that, where they actually recreated and showed that, yes, they, you know, if you did what Hollywood did, it's possible that they could have jumped that bar. All right.
Really? That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Quentin Tarantino. So going back to the love of the film, right? Love of Speed. Quentin Tarantino said that Speed is one of the best 20 films he had seen from 1992 to 2009.
Well, that's high praise. That's a long span of time.
And he watches a lot of movies, man.
He does.
So the budget, like I said, $30 million. Box office, $350.4 million.
It was a huge hit. I mean, and we talk about lines that have kind of seeped into the pop culture. People say pop quiz hot shot all the time. That's one of those lines that you hear it and people don't even remember where it came from anymore.
Right.
It's just become such a big part of, you know, culture.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. That's about the only... I was thinking about it. That's about the only one-liner. I mean... Die Hard has more, but that's because it's just chock full of glib one-liners. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Pop Quiz Hot Shot was, you know, not Keanu's, like, line. It originally started from you know, Jeff Bridges' line, but then Dennis Hopper, you know, turned it around and made it, you know,
yeah,
his.
Which I thought, which I think is that's why it sticks to you, because it's said by multiple characters throughout the movie, so that's one reason it resonates.
Well, Roger Ebert gave it 4 stars. He says, "Speed is like an ingenious wind-up machine. It's smart, inventive thriller. We've seen this done before, but seldom so well or such at a high pitch of energy." And I have to agree there.
Yeah, it's, I mean, he said it perfectly. He really did.
Rotten Tomatoes critic score, 94%. So one of those other, like, really high, high, high 90s critic score movies. Audience, though, I was surprised to see this. Audience score, 76%.
Which is weird, because I don't know anyone who doesn't like Speed.
I don't, you know? Either. I really don't know. I mean, people call it, like, the bus movie or Die Hard on a bus. Maybe they thought it was, like, copy. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's not to like about it. Like I said, I can't even think of a scene I'd fast forward through. I mean, I have a little, like, moments about it, you know, whatever. But, I mean...
Well, I think it speaks to some of that is Keanu, for a long time, was always judged very unfairly. Yeah. And I think that has something to do with it.
Well, you know, for any movie, you know, collector or any movie guy, the 6 most nerdiest words are, "I own it on Laserdisc." And this is the one of the movies I own on Laserdisc.
I think also if you were a DVD guy in the early days of DVD, you had Speed on DVD. It's like one of those, like, standard, like, guy movies that every guy has for some reason.
Yep.
Because it's really great to show off, like, equipment with. It's got great sound. It's got good picture.
Yep.
It's a good demo disc.
It is, and I mean, it's really cheap. I mean, it was a popular movie, so you can find it on Laserdisc for, like, you know, $1. I mean, you can find it on DVD just about anywhere. Yeah, and it's one of those movies that you can watch, like, over and over and still get, like, pulled into it, you know what I mean? And it doesn't get old. So, yeah, I really enjoyed going back and watching it because, you know, you hardly see movies like this, you know, anymore that just keep you, you know, on your seat and that are so that simple, you know what I mean? Just a real simple story.
Yeah, I probably had not seen it in at least 15 years, but I watched it a lot when it was newer. But going back to it all these years later, I was expecting to enjoy it, but I was really surprised how much I enjoyed it and how well it all held up. Like I said, it's great. Mm-hmm. Speed is legitimately great.
Yeah. Yep. Completely agreed. So are we gonna keep it an extra day, and. F the late fees?
Well, like I said, I think every guy owns Speed, so of course, yeah. I mean, I think you have to have it in your collection if you like action films, right, or you like Keanu, or Sandra Bullock for that matter.
What about Blown Away?
I get it back on time. I enjoyed revisiting it. It was nice to have that little nostalgia rush, but it didn't hold up as well as I remembered.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I really want to watch it again. There is a Speed 2, which stars
Cruise Control.
Cruise Control. Only star that you know that made it into to the next, you know, the sequel was Sandra Bullock.
Oh, and Joe Morton's in it too. Well, Joe Morton. He comes back as the captain.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Speed 2 is not good.
No.
It's got Jason Patrick as a whole different cop. It's not interesting.
No. All right. So recommendations. What are we thinking here? Like, what sort of? There's several different ways to go. Whether, you know, it was another action movie with Sandra Bullock as, like, the secondary character. You know.
Well, what I was gonna go for, because it would probably never have any other reason to ever recommend this movie. Except for this show, and I'm going to say Twister, the other big Jan de Bont movie, because it's got Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton, who we love. It's got Carrie Ells in it. And it's a movie you probably haven't seen in 20 years. Mm-hmm. But again, it's another movie that holds up really well. It's fun. It's got good effects for the time. It's totally worth revisiting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely. I'm going to go with a movie that we've already talked about before, actually.
What's that?
I'm going to go with Executive Decision.
That's a fun because one. You know, we love Kurt Russell.
I love how like those movies like that, like, you know, you're presented with problems and then like you have to solve them, and then you also have somebody who's you know, plays like a sort of a role just because they're there, you know. So Halle Berry,
the everyman hero,
like Halle Berry's character, I'm thinking, you know what I mean? Like she plays like the helper, just like Sandra Bullock had to like step in and do great things. And actually, Halle Berry, I didn't say this in the notes, but Halle Berry, you know, she was offered the role, for, you know, Sandra Bullock's character as Annie, and, you know, she turned it down. And they asked her, you know, later on, like, what, you know, what do you think about that? And she was like, oh, no, it's totally fine. Like, you know, that movie would have not done what it did for Sandra Bullock. You know what I mean? She would have just been like, you know, the bus driver, which is like really unfortunate because I think that she would have been just as great, you know, in it as well.
Well, things have a way of working out the way they're supposed to, I think. They both ended up having great careers. But one last thing I'll say about Executive Decision, I think that's a great call. It's another good, like, Die Hard-esque movie. And it's always fun to watch Seagal die suddenly in it. So that's a good one.
Any reason to do that? I mean, and Point Break is great, too. I think it's great. But, I mean, if you're going to go with, you know, these action movies, these, like, unpredictable, like, kind of thriller action movies, I think that would be a good, that would be a good choice to go with.
I agree. Well, I think that about wraps her up for us this week, man. Let's give a little preview for next time. I won't say too much about what we're going to talk about, but I will say it continues my efforts to slowly but surely make this into an all Nicolas Cage podcast.
Oh, no. More Nick Cage.
You know it, baby.
All right. Well, we look forward to that. We look forward to hearing from you guys. You know, hit us up on Twitter, hit us up on Facebook. I'd love to hear from you. Well, and thanks very much, and we'll see you next time.
I'm Matthew Estrin.
I'm Ryan Acree.
Go watch the movies, guys.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Video Culture. You can check us out on Twitter at Video Culture 2.
That's the number 2 for two guys talking about movies like Ryan and myself.
And you can also check us out on Facebook. Just search for Video Culture Podcast.
Also, be sure to stop by our official website, video-culture.com. There we have the entire show archives, as well as articles about film.
Yeah, so check us out. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, come hang out with us, talk movies. Did you like the show? Do you hate the show? Do you like or hate the movies we talked about? Let us know. Come chat with us, and let's all watch movies together.
All right, pop quiz. Airport. Gunman with one hostage. He's using her for cover. He's almost to a plane. You're 100 feet away.
What do you think? Shoot the hostage.
What?
Go for the good wound and he can't get to the plane with her. Clear shot.
You're deeply nuts, you know that?
All right, gentlemen, what we have here are 13 passengers in an express elevator. Bomb's already taken out cables. Bomber wants $3 million or he blows the emergency brakes.
Anything else that'll keep this elevator from falling?
Basement.
He can strike anywhere at any time.
Will the Mr. Guest please sign in?
Why are they messing with me? Do they think I'm doing this for fun?
For LA cop Jack Travon.
Tell me again, Harry, why did I take this job?
Oh, come on, 30 more years of this, you get a tiny pension and a cheap gold watch.
Cool.
The game began.
Very exciting, Jack. Some close calls, huh?
When someone put the city of Los Angeles to the ultimate test.
Pop quiz, hotshot.
There's a bomb on a bus. Once the bus goes 50 miles an hour, the bomb is armed. If it drops below 50, it blows up. What do you do? What do you do?
Now.
Are you insured?
Yeah, why?
He's the only solution.
We just got a ransom demand from your terrorist. Says he's rigged the city bus. Where's Jack?
Where do you think?
Stay on or get off.
Get off.
This is much better.
Everybody hold on!
Sandra Bullock.
Pop quiz. You have a hair trigger aimed at your head. What do you do? What do you do?
Speed. Get ready for Rush Hour.